This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 59 was recorded on September 19th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Julian Brigden, founder of MI2 Partners, is back with us today, and this episode of Macro Voices is brought to you by TopTradersOnPlug.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing. And right now, they're offering Macro Voices listeners a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Julian, it's great to have you back on the program. We've got so much going on the day that we're speaking, Monday, as we're recording this session. We've got crazy things happening in the world. The attack on Abqaiq, Saudi Arabia, is caused oil prices to go to the moon. We've already got trade wars pending. Maybe we're about to see an escalation to a shooting war with Iran. Not really clear yet exactly what's going to happen. We've got a world short of U.S. dollars. The Fed is struggling to stay ahead of the curve, so to speak. We've got Brexit, which is adding to global slowdown pressures. We've got inverting yield curves. We've got all this kind of stuff. It seems to me that if we don't get at least a minor recession out of it, it would have to mean that central planners have finally mastered the game. And I'm not inclined to think that the central planners are the masters of the game. Now, a few months back, you made the case that if our Federal Reserve were to cut rates right away, which they basically did, and relaunched QE, which they have not done yet, that they could save this cycle from turning and stretch it out further. Is there a case to be made here in the U.S. of a possible sell the news event on more monetary policy, since we have hard data that supports monetary policy reaching its limits in the EU and Japan?
So, look, I mean, you raise, you know, all the correct points, Eric. I mean, we have all these, you know, horrible situations. World short of dollars, Fed behind the curve, Brexit, global trade. Now we've got this situation in the Middle East, which, you know, you could make a case if it is extended, it's stagflationary, let's say. You know, if we start off with those, I mean, I think, you know, on the global trade side, I think there has, and there's quite a lot that's actually happened since the G7. And I think that's actually quite important, because I do think policymakers, when they met, and also at Jackson Hole, everything that we're hearing seems to suggest that they agreed to the Powell point that they need to keep this cycle going. And that requires a few things. So we've seen, for example, you know, one of the big ones, I think, is fiscal picks up the slack. We're not there yet, because correctly to your point, certainly in Japan and in Europe, we are running into the end of the efficacy of monetary policy. I think, you know, we've got more room in terms of monetary policy here in the US, but we do seem to have seen some positive developments potentially on that fiscal side. I think that's important. We've seen a de-escalation of the immediate tension around the trade wars. I'm not overly optimistic that we are going to see a true rapprochement, a rebuilding of the chimerica relationship. I think that is dead and buried, but I can see a bout of detente and, you know, a little farm deal or something like that, which just keeps some of the tension out of the way. But to come back to the Fed, I still think the Fed has to act. I don't think they've done enough. I would hope that with the data that we have recently seen, this debate over 0 or 25 is now dead, and the debate is 25 or 50, or let's say, you know, too quick 25s. Because to me, the only way that we keep this cycle going is that we get the equity market higher. Stasis is not enough. The minute the equity market starts to tread water, CEOs look to cut costs, either be it in CapEx, which is going to drop really quite precipitously as we move into year end, or even worse, in employment. And we can already see some signs for early 2020, unemployment might be increasing again. So they need to get the equity market up. They need to keep the housing market ticking over. That requires low bond yields. And singularly, and they failed to do this thus far, and you raise that specter, we need to have a weaker dollar. Right? You can't really have sustained reflation along the lines of, let's say, what we got in 2016 without that weaker dollar. And so far, that hasn't happened. I think they can engineer it. My guess is it'll probably take 100 basis points plus of cuts. I don't believe the ECB and the BOJ can keep up with that. They just haven't got the ammo. So I do think we could engineer it. I think we just need to create the conditions for the Fed to deliver. And that possibly suggests more pain. As I said, I think the data already is bad enough that there shouldn't be any debate anymore about should they cut. Now, that may seem a minor one where the market is already well ahead of that. But from a Fed perspective, that's actually a big deal. And then as you move into next year, as I said, I think we have to look for this fiscal spend potentially to come through. Obviously, it won't happen here in the US until 2021. But I think I've said to you before, I don't think there's any real debate on, you know, if there's going to be fiscal spending post the election. It's just, you know, who's in the White House and which direction does that fiscal spending get directed?
Julian, we recorded this interview on Monday afternoon. Now, there's probably been a fair amount of news feed coming out since we recorded it that our listeners have heard and we have not. But as of the time of this recording, it really looked like the escalation was continuing. And it's very interesting. The Houthis in Yemen have claimed, hey, we did it, and the White House won't hear it. You might say you did it, but we're still going to blame Iran. And of course, if this escalates to a military conflict with Iran, you've got the problem that Iran and China are allies, and we're right in the middle of a major trade negotiation with China that could be derailed by a conflict with Iran. So how do you see this all playing out, and what would it mean for markets?
Yeah, I mean, I conclude exactly what you've just enunciated, that certainly the US seems to be blaming the Iranians. Here's one thing I would say. I think, you know, by the time we get this, we may well have seen some sort of US retaliation. My sense is, when I look at, you know, talking to people and when I look at Trump's actions, this is a guy who's been incredibly reticent, Eric, to really stir the geopolitical pot, right? He's pulled back on strikes in the past with Iran. He's actually played things amazingly cool with Hong Kong and the Chinese. This is a guy who really is war adverse. I mean, it's one of the few positive things you could perhaps argue from a market perspective about the president, because he's certainly done enough in other areas to stir things up. But I'm pretty certain, unless he is really, really, really pushed, and I think, you know, we can see this with the departure of Bolton, right? This is not a guy, you know, who was fitting with the president's view of the world as you know, as he was a real hawk. This is, the president doesn't want to escalate a shooting match ahead of the election. So I'm hoping that, yes, we, you know, it's clear that, look, the Saudis can't patch this thing together as quickly as people think. I had a long conversation with some very connected people this morning on that particular issue. They're just, you know, it's not at all easy. And, you know, what's to stop whoever did launch the attack, as soon as the thing is patched up, to doing it again, right? There doesn't seem to be any defective defense against these drones. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that the tensions are necessarily going away, but I don't think the US really wants to escalate things in that particular sense. So that, to me, is a positive.
Julian, let's move on to a question which I think a lot of our listeners have really been pondering, which is, we know that you have been watching this bond market carefully, saying, okay, folks, this duration rally, yeah, it's interesting, it's got legs, it's moving, but it's going to reverse someday. Are we at the point where this is the trend reversal, where it's time to start thinking about a long-term short view on fixed income, or is this just a pullback before we move to even lower yields?
So, look, my hope is that it's just a, you know, this is a, we've got a pullback here, but it's a pullback that can develop into something bigger. And I say that because I've written quite extensively to all my sort of readers about how I feel about negative interest rates. I mean, I think negative interest rates are a train wreck. I think that the Fed would be a dire day for the US, especially for the US banking system, if we are forced to go down the route of Japan and Europe. I'm hoping that isn't the case, as I think you can construct a scenario where that happens. I think the longer that the Fed prevaricates about delivering the rate cuts which are necessary to push the equity market up, keep the housing market affordable, and weaken the dollar, the greater the risk that we end up going down that particular rabbit warren. But what I'm looking at the moment, my bet is that we are going to look into a sort of steeper curve. Now, it could be a bull steeper curve where the Fed just cut, you know, does finally get religion. They start to cut very aggressively and we steepen the curve out that way. Or it could be a bear steepener where this sort of convexity trade unwinds. I do think there's a little bit of inflation pressure still to come through, most notably on the PPI side into the end of the year. We'll have to offset against that some of the other data. But, you know, these bond moves are just being exaggerated by huge illiquidity, this sort of narrative of race to zero. As I said, I can see it. I could see it. It's just not my base case. And if we are moving, and it's important to watch this, Eric, as we move into early next year, you know, and time of the year that we are now, we're all beginning to think about 2020. If this fiscal story is going to start to get legs, right? And even in the US, we've had Trump talking about a capital gains tax cut if he has to, which is, you know, not the best, most effective form of fiscal spending, but it would be fiscal spending. To me, fiscal spending is hugely inflationary. And if we're going down this route, then to me, I don't want to be owning that long end of the bond market. You know, that's kind of my view. I don't think it's an issue straight away, but that's still my sort of inclination. So I'm tactically, at the moment, as I said, I'm playing steepeners. We have a tactical, a short out in longer duration, which certainly worked well up until Sunday night, let's say, and the Saudi move, which has obviously caused a little bit of flight to quality. But generally speaking, I'm not at this point looking to race this bond market to zero. I think it could happen next year. It's possible. As I said, the longer the Fed sits on the fence, the greater the risk. I'm hoping they don't, for all our sakes.
Well, Julian, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic All-Stars appearance. For the benefit of any listeners who are not already familiar with your work, please tell them how they can follow your work and learn about what you do.
If you're an institutional investor, you'd like to get hold of us, you can contact us at support@mi2partners.com. Alternatively, if you're a retail client, please reach out to Macro Insiders. That's the joint venture I have with Raoul Powell. And if you'd just like to follow me on Twitter, it's @JulianMI2.
Julian, we look forward to having you back for another update in a couple of weeks. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by Top Traders Unplugged. This podcast, which I highly recommend, is delivered to you by some of the world's leading practitioners and gives you an unprecedented insight into the world of trend following and other rules-based investment strategies, which have delivered outstanding returns for many decades. So if you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets, without emotions and without predictions, go to toptradersunplugged.com/macro. Where right now, you can claim a free copy of The Many Flavors of Trend Following. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.